Hi, I would like to welcome you to this podcast. I am Pastor Harley Wheeler with the Broadway United Methodist Church, and this series of podcasts will be looking at the story in Genesis of Joseph and his brothers. It's rather important that we realize that the Genesis takes some many chapters to tell the story of Joseph, who had many adventures, was badly treated by his brothers, ends up in a position of great prominence. It's one of those stories of someone who overcomes great obstacles and you root for him all the way. But it also brings out the connection that needed to exist between all the 12 sons of Jacob, who comprise the heads, the patriarchs of the tribes of Israel. And so in the end, we have also a lesson about brotherly love and about the importance of brothers standing up for her and sometimes standing in the place of another brother. So we're looking in chapter 37, and it begins this way. It says, Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. So first off, those of us who are making this a Bible study, we have a couple things to overcome. First off, it talks about Jacob, and it is indeed the story of Jacob and his son Joseph and the 11 other sons that he had with his four wives. Jacob is often also called Israel. He bears those two names in the book of Genesis, and it is that he is the father of the tribes of Israel, the Hebrew people, that he carries that name. And also we find that he has four wives. I wonder sometimes for yourself what you've often thought about these Old Testament characters having these numbers of wives and these families like this. Well, one thing that is good to remember, that by the time of Jesus, the rabbis of old had pointed out that while multiple wives were a legal arrangement, they were not wise. In fact, every case in Scripture where this happens leads to problems. By Jesus' time, they had ruled that a man should have only one wife. And so, this situation we see that reflects a culture of very long ago, a subsistence culture, and some legal marriages that were legal indeed by the standards of their time. Already by Jesus' time, the rabbis had looked at this and said, this isn't a go-ahead in the Torah that one should have more than one wife. They said, you should have one. And also it says in this verse 2, these are the generations of Jacob. And then it doesn't proceed to give us like a genealogy, giving us all the sons' names and maybe their sons' sons. The Bible actually will put things in there reminding us that it is a story of Joseph and his other brothers who are the sons of Jacob. And also often it points backward to the material before, which talked about, many of the descendants, including descendants of Jacob's brother Esau. But then we want to continue in the story. Joseph is 17 years old, and even though we've often heard in Bible times that you were considered quite marriageable, quite ready to be on your own at quite a young age, he's still considered a boy. He's still considered very much under the direction of his father. And here we have this situation where he is amongst 10 other brothers from other wives of his father, and his brother Benjamin, who is not mentioned in this part of the story, is the only brother he has from his mother Rachel. What we have in here is playing out the jealousy and the competition that came about in these family arrangements. And also the wisdom and maybe the test that can really a father be trusted to treat all his sons fairly when he has so many by so many wives. Common sense would tell us that it is likely that one will be favored over another, and certainly very difficult to pull off what seems to be fairness amongst that whole family. Many people in the ancient world might have thought it was an obvious thing, and perhaps only honest to express a preference for one child out of the many. But on the other hand, just about every culture that has stories that touch on these multiple wife arrangements, or even arrangements where there are many children, the folklore is full of stories of brotherly jealousies. This sorts us out and kind of puts us in a place where we understand that real life is being described here. In fact, in terms of the reliability of the scriptures, there's really nothing in this story that is out of the way, unlikely. There are very few things that amount to miracles and answered prayer. And it is, after all, a story not so much about Joseph, not so much about Jacob and his sons, but the main character in the Old Testament is God, and he does act on his people's behalf. But the events described fit in with the culture and the times as we understand them from history as we best have it. And lastly, with our Bible study notes that we could probably put in here, it says that Jacob gave Joseph a coat of what's called many colors, or a highly decorated coat, or a robe of many colors. The translations into English of this Hebrew phrase are going to vary, because there just really aren't that many other Hebrew words in the Old Testament that describe rich apparel, a special apparel that would be given to somebody in celebration of status. And we might note that not being able to translate that word exactly. Well, I mean, was it a coat with ornamentation sewed on it, as in, you know, rich plates of gold or other metals? Was it expensively dyed? Well, we don't know, and it doesn't really hold us back from following the story. What we have is that Jacob, quite frankly, it says, loves one son above the others, and then we see what happens there. Now, we go to Joseph had a dream, verse 5. Now, Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brothers said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us, or are you indeed to rule over us?" So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers and said, "Behold, I have dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me." And when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you?" And his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in his mind. One really wonders whether Joseph is as tactful as he might possibly have been. Is he somewhat at fault? He had this dream. Does he need to tell the dream in such a guileless way to his brothers? Is he boasting? You know, the Old Testament will not always give you a clear sign saying, "And this person did an unwise thing," or "This is a sign of bad character." It does it a few times, but very often it tells the story, allowing you to make a judgment, and the judgments are based on good common sense and also an eye to proper reverence to God, and also an eye to what God is doing. And so he has this dream, and you know, we ask ourselves, well, in the Old Testament, God has spoken to several people in dreams, and prophets have visions. Are we supposed to pay that very much close attention to our dreams this day? You can, of course, review the last few dreams you had when you slept, and note that often they come when there's a restless night. There's research on the dream state in people's minds, and a great deal of speculation about where some dream material comes from. I can tell you now that books that are put out about interpreting your dreams, understanding what your dreams mean, are mostly just so much baloney. You don't need to worry about that. And also, depth psychology in the early 1900s spent a lot of time analyzing people's dreams, trying to find out what the subconscious was trying to tell the conscious mind in the context of a dream. And of course, we must also hold this in some arm's length, because our subconscious mind is that. It is subconscious, and we cannot know what goes on there. Depth psychology and the the realization that the mind is terribly complex, that things can come out of one's mind that one didn't see coming and do have some shed some light on our behavior and our thinking. This might be true, but it is just a piece of that. We live in a complex world. We don't completely understand ourselves. And so here we are, understanding that you may get into situations that you don't completely have a grasp on why you have an emotion that you're experiencing, why something seems like such a strong intuition and should be followed. And so we discover here that the story is one of God sending Joseph a dream. And of course, Joseph might be characterized as one who said, well, it obviously came from God, and that is Old Testament, and also New Testament, that those who had a dream that came from God knew very much that the dream was sent from God and should be said. We don't usually have that strong of an impression about our dreams. In fact, I've never run across anybody who had a dream that seemed to be predictive, that even had the idea to share it with me. I understand the experience would be very rare. God can speak to us in dreams, but in the New Testament times, as we live in the days of the church, God's word has been fully revealed in Jesus Christ. And he can, with his hand and in his wisdom, send us a dream to guide us. Generally, dreams that are incredibly meaningful are of a piece of comfort from God. But we move on now that Joseph has this dream, and the meaning of the dream, especially to people who are reading the story, is that Joseph will someday be ruler. And even in that last dream where it says the sun and the moon and 11 stars, you know, and Jacob would say, well, it's obviously the sun and the moon stand for me and my wife or my wives, and the 11 stars stand for the sons. He knows this. It says he's kept this in his heart. But we can only take away from that sometimes in the symbolic language of the Bible that people understood as symbolic language that pointed to meaning, that the sun and the moon can stand for positions of leadership over a nation. But we interrupt the story. It's in verse 12, it says, now his brothers went to pasture their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers pasturing the flock at Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. And he said to him, here I am. So he said to him, go now and see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring me word. So he sent him from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a man found him wandering in the fields, and the man asked him, what are you seeking? I am seeking my brothers, he said. Tell me, please, where they are pasturing the flock. And the man said, they have gone away, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. Now again, this isn't exactly the way you and I might tell a story, but it is a good way to tell a story, that Joseph called his son. And his son came and said, in answer to the call, and said, here I am. Jacob had even announced why he was going to call his son, and the son is ready to hear the father from his own lips tell him what he is going to send him to do. And so Jacob sends him, and so the story tells us that Joseph went. And along the way, Joseph is even guided to find his brothers. In verse 18, it says, they saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what becomes of his dreams. But when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hand, saying, let us not take his life. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand, is what he wanted to do, and restore him to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore, and they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty, and there was no water in it. So first, we should be shocked at the level of violence that the brothers are capable of inflicting, that they can look at Joseph coming, and surely, yes, they wonder about their prospects for the future, their inheritance, but this is a murder that they're talking about, and it is quite true that even in the days before the Ten Commandments, people knew they were not supposed to murder. In fact, that they went back in their own family history, God's covenant with Noah said that I will demand the lifeblood of a man from the one that takes it. And so the brothers do calmly plan a murder, and they say, you know, let's kill the dreamer. Let's kill this master dreamer. You can hear them saying it with air quotes. That's pretty much the literal translation. And Reuben is just pretty much saying, well, he has one plan to rescue Joseph, but he also points out something that they would say. You don't want, it just seemed to them, we might almost say, unlucky to have a brother's blood on their hands, that they would be looking at this and saying to themselves, well, there is such a thing as vengeance. There is, even though they cannot be mindful of God while they're plotting the murder of their brother. They also understand that justice is something that occurs in this world, and you don't want to be on the business end of justice. And they say, well, that sounds fine. We'll throw him into a pit. We're not technically going to be the ones who took his life. Verse 25 says, and then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And his brothers listened to him. Then the Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. They took Joseph to Egypt. First off, we do understand that we're recording a time where people sold someone else into slavery. If you were caught unfortunate and powerless, the one thing that a tribe, you know, they're, you know, treating Joseph actually as a stranger, that a tribe might do is take you and sell you because the price for slaves was good. Each of the brothers will come away with somewhat more than, two shekels of silver from the transaction. And this is the first instance of the Bible of one person selling another, although slavery is well known from ancient documents in the lands thereabout in Canaan and in Egypt and in other places. And so the brothers say to themselves, we can profit by this. Selling him into slavery was a pretty much a sure thing that they would never hear from him again. And so they don't exactly have a piece of compassion. They say, we shall profit by this. And it is interesting that you know, you have this picture now of brothers treating another brother like a stranger, like one who has no claim upon their loyalty, like one who there's no reason to show patience or love or kindness toward them. And so Joseph is sold by his brothers into slavery. And we see him going on down to Egypt. Now, verse 29 says, and when Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes and returned to his brothers and said, the boy is gone. And I, where shall I go? Then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in the blood. And they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, this we have found. Please identify whether it is your son's robe or not. And he identified it, said, it is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. So the one thing we might learn is that if you go ahead and follow your baser instincts, if you go ahead and pursue your own interests as you best see it and commit crimes, the next thing you'll be doing is telling a great deal of lies and hurting a lot of other people. The grief of Jacob goes in and out of this story. Jacob will not give up his grief. He will be mourned and cry. And you'll see that, you know, if Jacob stands in for God, who is the father of us all, Jacob is the father of all those sons, will not be able to let go of the grief that he has for losing one of the sons. These men who felt that they were taking a brother who they found to be annoying, who seemed to be tactless, who from their standpoint told tales about him, whom they went from not being able to speak nicely to out and out hating, for them, they could easily have been saying to themselves, well, this is someone that needs killing. This one doesn't need to be living amongst us. He is in our way. But almost as a surprise to them, they discover that they are hurting their father. It's interesting that people as these sons are, Joseph is one of the younger of the brothers. And so these are men of work. They're They're seeing themselves as running this large family establishment of flocks and herds. And even though they are very much in the encampment of their father, in the common life centered around their father, they almost carry that young person to middle age attitude that we have that says that it is my life that is going on. And I don't really have to worry, have to be steward of the feelings and the emotional life of my parents. And so they find, to their own surprise, that this is actually a big deal. They must go to Jacob and they must put him to grief. Jacob will look at this and decide that Joseph is lost to him. If you consider the experiences of people that you know that that have lost a child, or either as a child or as a very young adult, that pain doesn't go away. What is pretty much said is you don't actually outlive that child. You continue living as a different person. And grief is a constant companion. And even when in the normal course of things, weeping ceases, we do find that you're never completely recovered from that. One just goes on. They have in one stroke hurt their brother and hurt their father, and it comes to them almost as a surprise. They really didn't suppose in their own thought, as the story is told, as this tale unrolls before us, they discover more things about the consequences of sin, and the consequences really, as this story is, that about brothers, as the consequences of not treating a brother as family. So then Jacob, it says in verse 34, tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. And so the story is shown in a different way to keep us going with this is what's going on in Jacob's house. Now this, we're going to understand what's happening with Joseph. Though the brothers have rejected Joseph, though the brothers have looked at Joseph as one they don't need to worry about, as one who doesn't count in the family, God has his eye upon him. Now, Joseph is not actually ready to begin having good times. He is separated from his family. In ancient times, to be separated from your family and your home was as much as people would call it. It was like death. Joseph is in a hopeless place. But as we read the story, we know that God is watching out for him. Now, my friends, when you see somebody in a hopeless place, or when you describe your own life as one that has ceased to have any good choices, any good thing can happen, do understand that God is watching out. If someone has hurt you, I mean done real damage, I mean please don't hold on to anything at all in the way of anger if it has just been a matter of an offhand word, of not being thanked, of someone seeming to put themselves forward to your loss. These are crosses the Christian gets to bear. They have their reward in heaven. But for those of us who do understand that there have been people who have done us real damage so that our life is cracked, the foundation is torn away, we must rebuild after seemingly a disaster, we should be mindful that God sees all this. One thing this story will show is brothers who are not able to get away with the consequences of their evil act. And notice that evil act came from evil emotions. They were envious, they were jealous, they were angry. They didn't find a way to talk it through. They didn't seek reconciliation. And these attitudes have their fruit, in this case, in something that was tantamount to a murder. The Bible would say that those who grab someone and sell them into slavery, well, in the Old Testament, it was a capital crime, just as if you had murdered them. And this sudden death, this violent death, realized that Jacob would have to think about Joseph's last moment, the fact that a wild beast had torn him, the fact that his son's body was not even recovered. His grief would be doubled and tripled by the trauma of the act. And so chapter 37 sets us up with the story. It does have in this story, two places where you see, well, is there a placeholder, a type of Christ in the story. And we see that Jacob stands in as the place of the loving father. And we know God as a loving father. And he loves all his sons. Jacob is obviously imperfect, as all these characters are. But he cannot at all leave off loving any one of them. He desires them all to be and to be well. This is a picture of the father's love. Joseph is one who is in the plan of God. He is in the midst of what God is doing for Israel, which is something Jesus will be doing. And before Jesus, it will be David. And Joseph is also rejected by his own people and sold for a few pieces of silver. And so this act of rejection that the brothers do will symbolize both the Israel's rejection of God's plan throughout its history. They could look back and see, you know, the same attitudes, the jealousies, the self-centeredness, the concern for your own stuff and your own prosperity, leading a heart away from God. And so Joseph stands in that place of Christ as one who was sold, one who was rejected by his brothers, where his brothers wiped their hands and said, "That's the last we'll see of him." And this happened to Jesus on the cross. So this story will continue, and we'll continue with the next podcast as we look at chapter 39. And we'll see the unrolling of a story that gives a foundational message for all of the Jewish people that read it ever after, that God's care is constant, that he sees us even when we are far away and in prison, as Joseph will be, and also that God is telling a story of how he is working redemption for his people, how even in spite of their own disobedience, he will be accomplishing his will. He'll also be teaching them this strong lesson of brotherly love. And we take as Christians this lesson of brotherly love in an even more serious way, because Jesus has declared that we have a ministry to the whole world. They had a noble thing to do, Joseph and his brothers, uphold the clan that was surrounding their father Jacob. They would be Israel. They would even be aware that the promises of God were resting in their family, though they don't much seem like they believe it. And as these brothers understand, there's no place for them to be except inside of God's plan. You know, your life may take twists and turns. You might be an even-tempered person and understand that there will be times in your life when someone will have done, again, so much damage or showed so much hostility or just beyond the limit of what we could expect in human behavior, we're ready to say, well, fine, I'm cutting myself off. Sometimes to protect vulnerable people and to survive, one must cut oneself off. But the Christian still says, you know, they're in my love. This is something that's not right if it's permanent and must point to reconciliation, if at all possible. Joseph and his brothers will reconcile, even though the story leads to Joseph, you know, ends here in chapter 37 with Joseph being led away to slavery. It is remarkable to remember that Jewish people like us could read the story knowing how it ends up, knowing how things will turn around and the brothers will recognize they needed Joseph most of all. So we should look at our stories in the way we can read this story. We know that God points us to brotherly love. He points us to forbearance and gentleness toward our neighbor, and he points us to trusting in him. So we're going to conclude the podcast here. I thank you for listening to it. This has been Pastor Harley Wheeler with the Broadway United Methodist Church in this podcast on Joseph and his brothers. This has been the first podcast, number one. I urge you to join with us as you can go to podcast number two. Thanks and God bless.